Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show, one that I'm looking forward to, because we're going to talk about a topic that's on everybody's mind, at least it should be, and not a lot of people know a lot about it. We're going to speak about the supply chain and what that really means, because it affects everybody. It doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter your race, creed, color, or anything. This is about being able to survive this, know how to navigate it, and understand what started it, because it's not about politics, although I think most things seem to be politically based at this point, so people can just lose their minds, not think critically, and do what everybody wants you to do, which is to hate on each other. So now it's time to take a step back and figure out the underpinnings. And today we're going to speak with Mr. Seton Motley. He is the president of Less Government, a DC-based nonprofit organization dedicated to reducing the power of government and protecting the First Amendment from government assault. One of America's leading authorities on technology and telecom policy, Mr. Motley is also a writer, a television and radio commentator, a political and policy strategist, lecturer, debater, activist, and policy advisor to the Heartland Institute. And Mr. Motley, I'm looking forward to our conversation because you write a lot, and you write for a blog called Less Government, lessgovernment.org. People can find your work there. And I was really taken by a couple of articles you wrote, one about the supply chain and the fact that we're running out of food. I don't think people understand the massive underpinnings of the supply chain. So let's start off there. What constitutes it?
Well, the supply chain, of course, is where we get our stuff, and whether it's food or, you know, your television or whatever. And a lot of it, I've framed the food aspect of it as a national security issue in addition to an economic issue. Because, you know, before you can watch your television or play, you know, go to your sport, you know, your football game or whatever, you got to eat. And we've spent, you know, it's been a long time coming. God bless Donald Trump. He's been talking about it for decades. I constantly refer to a 1988 interview he did with Oprah Winfrey, and his trade talk in 88 on Oprah's show was identical to that on which he ran for president and then started acting upon once he was in office. What he basically said was, we spent a lot of our time, and we have, making things worse and worse and worse for domestic manufacturers, higher taxes, higher regulations, and at the same time, open our markets with almost no impediments whatsoever to products from all over the world, who at the same time, while we were making things harder for manufacturers, they were making them easier. They're with subsidies and tax breaks and all sorts of additional advantages, like, for example, China with slave labor and those things. You know, free is a very good price for your labor when it comes to the bottom line. And then China subsidizes your products on top of that and then sends them into America. And our manufacturers are supposed to compete with that. Well, you can't. That's not free trade. It's not fair trade. I mean, it's one-sided. It's, you know, every time someone said Trump was starting a trade war with China, I said, no, they started a trade war with us decades ago. He's finally shooting back. And it was working to a great degree. He imposed, I remember I did an article once, I did the math. The first 2 years he imposed, I think, a total of like $91 billion in tariffs, and our economy grew by $2 trillion. That's a pretty good return on your tariff investment. And then I'm getting the numbers wrong. I wrote the article, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, but it was something like, you know, exponentially greater return because he was cutting taxes, he was cutting regulations by the ton, and he was evening out. He was applying very strategically tariffs to China and other countries that were met. Of the three things, there's tariffs because they tariff our stuff coming in. We don't tariff hardly anything. There's trade limits, meaning China says you can only bring in 5 televisions a year or whatever, we impose hardly any limits at all on stuff coming in here. And I think the most damaging is the subsidies. You can't compete on an open market. I'll give you an example. Sugar's in everything. You think it's just on, you know, your Frosted Flakes, but it's in, you know, go walk down a grocery store aisle, pick 4 items, there's sugar in 3 of them. It's a staple. Brazil controls half, there's over 100 countries that sell sugar. Brazil controls half the market. Why? Because they subsidize their sugar $4 billion a year. That means when their sugar hits the market, they can charge $4 billion a year less than our manufacturers, than everybody else's manufacturers. Thailand subsidizes $2 billion a year. They control 10% of the market. So our farmers are competing against these types of subsidies with no limits on the imports we can bring in to compete against them. So that's part of the supply chain, is part of the unfair trade practices. And it's really a sellout of the country, because CEOs got richer. This is why we've watched for many decades Wall Street go through the roof when low and middle class wages have flatlined. Because they've taken, the Rust Belt wasn't the Rust Belt in 1972. But then Nixon went to China. We started trading with China, and they took tens of millions of our jobs, not just China, but obviously all these countries all over the world, and we let them. Well, that's good for the CEOs. That's good for the boards of directors, but it's bad for the tens of millions of people in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Indiana that lost their factory jobs and lost their incomes. That's how we created the Rust Belt. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't an act of God. It was bad policy over many decades. And so it came into sharp contrast and sharp focus when the China virus was released, and we started looking at, okay, we need medicine. Well, 90%+ of our medicine's made in China. That's a good idea. And then with the mass imposition of government lockdowns, that totally distorted the marketplace that we'd set up over many decades. And as Republican states started opening up, that started again. It was like taking your foot off, you stand on a garden hose, and then you take your foot off the garden hose, water starts rushing through again. And then we started realizing, well, it's not just medicines. We get almost everything we use on a daily basis from overseas. And so what it did was, I hope, like you were saying, I hope it made a lot more people realize how completely anti-American American governmental policy has been when it comes to the production and manufacturing of goods. And not just their production and manufacturing, but their creation too. Our government policy on intellectual property has been obscenely awful since 2013. And, before you can make the widget, you have to invent the widget. And we in 2013, we passed a really stupid law called the America Invents Act. And what it did was, it was backed by big tech and other big corporations. And what it did was, it made it a lot easier for them to steal patents rather than pay licensing fees for them. And so you've got, and then China saw this and started inviting intellectual property creators there. Of course, they steal $600 billion a year in intellectual property. But now they're starting to realize, rather than steal it, we should invite their creators, subsidize them, give them good terms. But we get access to the things they create. And once again, we were imposing policy that made things less attractive for creation. They were making themselves more attractive for the people who create these things. And, then when we hit this pandemic logjam, we realized we can't make anything. We can't do anything. We've outsourced everything. And that's what we're realizing now is, and that's why you see millions of people quitting their jobs, because there's now going to be a seismic shift on who does what where. It's really, they've really screwed things up in a major way, and then revealed it to us with their government lockdowns in the last 2 years.
Well, on that note, let's take our first break, because that's a lot to unpack, and I think it sets the table for what the problem is, and I'm hoping we can figure out a way that we can get out of this mess that we're in. So we'll return take that up when we come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Seton Motley. And before the break, we were talking about how this problem started. And I want to go back to the CEOs, and correct me if I'm wrong. They have a vested interest in getting as cheap a labor force as they can possibly get, right? So they don't want American union people who are getting paid decent amount of money. They want as cheap as they can get, and they're outsourcing it in order to maximize profits. Is that how we should think about it?
That's exactly. They're basically pirates, and they'll go into whatever cove is most hospitable to them. They have no loyalty to the United States. They have a loyalty to their shareholders and their boards of advisors. And Republicans for a long time have fallen for that trap. And, oh, if it's good for the business, corporate world, it's good for America. Well, no, it's not. And what happened was, as this shift started to occur, because remember in the 50s or the 40s during World War II, we outproduced Germany and Japan. Japan's tanks, for example, the Tigers, were much better than our Sherman tanks. They were much better. But the problem for the Germans was we were making 8 or 9 or 10 Shermans for every Tiger. And we were just overrunning them. We became the manufacturing hub of the planet. And that's partly why, the rest of the world was destroyed, but that's part of the reason why America became the envy of the world in the 50s. And if you think about it, that continued all the way to, for 60 years, we were the monster. Well, it started unraveling in the 70s, but that 50s, the Eisenhower, Ozzie and Harriet, Leave It to Beaver world was created by our ability to have middle-class Americans get middle-class jobs making things in America. And then Nixon went to China, and everybody went, oh, we can get slave labor, and we can get cheap labor, and we can, then it turned trade negotiations in D.C. on its head. Before then, we'd be arguing for some protection. We'd say, look, they're subsidizing their crap. We got to offset that with some sort of trade policy, tariffs or whatever. They're limiting what we can export to their country. Well, all of a sudden now, they weren't in America. They were in the other country. So their trade limits on our stuff benefited them. Their tariffs on our stuff benefited them. They were getting the subsidies rather than competing against them. So then you had all these multinational companies, corporations in D.C. negotiating for even worse trade policy in the United States to further drain the country of any manufacturing base whatsoever. So that, they wanted more and more favorable policy that allowed them to move more and more stuff out of America and overseas. And so it turned the whole lobbying thing on its head. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got, plus from a lobbying perspective, because it's all about lobbying. I was born and raised outside D.C. I've watched it my whole life. You've got, once upon a time, you had corporations arguing for lower taxes and less regulations. Well, now most of these corporations are overseas and they're competing against U.S. countries. So they don't mind so much if U.S. countries pay more taxes, or companies pay more taxes. They don't mind if they have to face more regulations, because that helps them. Mm. Because it makes their U.S. companies' jobs harder, more expensive, to make stuff and build stuff. Meanwhile, they're building it over in China with coal-fired power plants and slave labor, and then, you know, exporting it here and getting subsidized to do so. And we're sitting over here taxing our companies into oblivion and regulating them into oblivion, and then opening the borders to unlimited subsidized crap from overseas.
Right.
And so, you know, lather, rinse, repeat for half a century, and all of a sudden we're making nothing. We do nothing. They keep talking about us being a service economy. Mm-hmm. That's the route to a third world country. You have a few very wealthy people who are tech moguls, and then everybody else is gardening and mowing lawns and, cooking food for the rich people. There is no middle class. Look at California. They're the visual aid for the rest of the country. There is no middle class in California anymore. It is a third world country unto itself.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And I think about what you just said. It seems like it's a template that's gone through every single sector of the society. I can talk about the healthcare side. We took entrepreneurial, independent, private practice doctors and made them into employees, where they're all right. stuck on salary. They've outsourced right. healthcare. There's a ton of people coming in with visas to take over as workers in the inpatient side. Of course, they're not getting as much money as they otherwise could, but it's more than they would make leaving their country. So it's the right. same template. I don't care what it is, it seems like.
Well, and of course, I can't, with some little minor exceptions, I can't think of a major sector of the economy that's more screwed up by government than healthcare. You got six or seven national government programs, Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, the Child Health Insurance Program. Obviously, the entire VA is single-payer government healthcare. And then there's three or four ancillary small federal government programs. And, I remember in Texas, I lived in Texas in the mid-90s, and you saw doctor's offices all over the place mm-hmm. in Texas. We won't take any more Medicare patients because it doesn't pay enough. And this is back then. It doesn't pay enough, and it takes forever to get the money that they do pay. They sometimes pay below the cost of the materials for the procedures.
Well, hold on. It's not sometimes. It's all the time.
All the time.
All the
and
time.
What happens is, this is where the morons like Bernie Sanders, Medicare for all. Well, they're price shifting. You want to know the main reason why private insurance is so expensive? It's because they're price shifting all the government programs that don't pay anything to the private sector. So you pay more for, you pay $800 for a procedure that Medicare pays $100 for mm-hmm. because they're trying to average it out and make a living. And it costs $300 to do the procedure. So Medicare pays $100, we pay $800 to offset it. Then you throw in 20 to 50 million illegal aliens going to the emergency room every time they've got the sniffles and not paying for it. And then you blame the private sector with all that information in place.
I'd go even further.
It's been a professional hit by the government on Medicare. On the healthcare sector. I had a health savings account. I've been self-employed for 11 years. I had a health savings account for 10. Obamacare finally caught up to and killed my health savings account. For people who don't know, a health savings account was a great idea, which Obamacare basically killed. What it was every year you put $2,650 as an individual tax-free into a health savings account, a specialty savings account, and you bought a high deductible policy, $7,000 or $8,000, and then you paid for little stuff. If you went to the doctor for a routine physical, you just paid out of your money. And of course, the doctors were thrilled to see it because they were getting cash instead of having to do the insurance. And then at the end of the year, rather than paying the higher premiums 12 months a year, you were paying a lower premium for the high deductible policy, and you got to keep the money. You got to keep the difference. The insurance company didn't get it. You got it. And then next year, you got to put another $2,650 in. And if you were healthy, you didn't go to the doctor at all, you saved all the money. Well, Obamacare killed that. So I had to go into the regular insurance pool. So, yeah, this has been a professional hit by the government on every sector, like you said, and they've been the most successful with the healthcare sector, the health insurance sector, healthcare sector.
You know, I would go further. I think if you look at this template, it's all the same. For example, doctors no longer have control of their own persons anymore. They can't prescribe for patients. They can't write notes for patients for exemption. They can't do anything. Can't prescribe based on their training. And because they're held hostage by regulation, by the big foot of the government, it's changed how people are able to be taken care of. It's not like, you're right, there are the haves and the have-nots, those that have the means pay cash and they're out of the system. And the doctors who are able to stay free, have their own independent practice, are able to work outside the system. But it's gotten very difficult recently, I think, to even try to stay independent. You have to go underground and be very incognito.
It's almost black market.
Almost. Point. Agreed.
Yeah. You know, I always say, you know, people, the left always talks about the wealth gap, right? The gap between the rich and the poor. And I always point out to them, that gap is as big or as small as government is. The government is the wedge between the rich and everybody else, because only the rich can afford big government.
Ooh, that's well
Every
said.
Time you increase the size of government, more people fall below the line and become have-nots or the poor or whatever category you want to into which you want to place them. You know, there are marginal people all the time because government has created the margin. And every time government gets smaller, more people move above the line. Every time government gets bigger, more people fall below the line. And again, government is probably larger in the healthcare sector than any other sector. So more people fall below the line. I'm below the line, and now I'm getting older, and it's starting to be an issue. Thankfully, I've been very healthy for my life, and now all of a sudden I'm having to dip my toe into the healthcare sector, and it's awful. I keep telling these people, I can't wait till we get to the point where I pay you with chickens, because it's just going to be much easier that way.
I think that's a great place to take our second break and to think about this, because it's not like you're right. It's not like you get better. It's like it's like playing limbo. How low can you go? On that note, let's take our break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Seton Motley, and you should go to lessgovernment.org to see his writings. And there are
time. If I may,
oh, sure.
Doctor, there's a newsletter sign up thing right on the page, right on the top of the homepage. And if you sign up, all you'll get is emails when we write something and nothing else. We, unlike Google and Facebook and big tech, we don't lease your data. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, thank you. That's great information. And it's not charge. It's just the facts. And the facts are, you know, they're bad enough. You don't need to color anything or add any emotional injection, because people were like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know. But I mean, now that we've seen how this supply chain has rolled out, and I think you're absolutely right, COVID was a perfect example. I couldn't get dressings, bandages, anything in my office, suction canisters, because supply chain was ridiculous. It went straight to the hospitals, and then everybody else had gloves, had to fend for themselves.
COVID, if I had to give myself some injections now, I just got a prescription to give myself some injections. I couldn't get the damn needles because everything's going to the stupid COVID vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Which, but you know, okay, you're an actual doctor. I've become an amateur virologist within the last 2 years. Isn't everything we've done on the COVID virus antithetical to everything we know about viruses?
Yes, in a nutshell.
We have to reach herd immunity. Does wearing masks help or hinder reaching herd immunity?
They hinder.
It hinders. Hiding under your bed, does that help or hinder achieving herd immunity? You know the reporter Cheryl Atkinson, former CBS reporter? She does her own thing now called Full Measure. I encourage you and all your listeners to go to, I don't get any money from her. I just saw it and it was incredibly enlightening. She did go to YouTube, you can find it. But she did a segment on COVID and the Amish. And they talked to Amish people and they said, yeah, we didn't lock down. We didn't wear masks. He goes, when coronavirus started going around, we all got together. We went to church the very next Sunday and we all used the same communion cup. And we all got it. They've been done with China virus since May of 2020. They're done. They had no Delta variant. They had no second wave. They had nothing because they all got it. And now they're done. So, yes, I've been saying this is an international IQ test and every nation failed.
Well, you know, is there a bigger picture here? Is it all about controlled economy, planned economy? And everybody has to drop down to the lowest denominator for this to come online?
Well, and what this does is it's made the rich fabulously richer. Mm. All you could do under the lockdown was sit at home and go on Facebook and order from Amazon. And these people got, they were already, you know, wealth beyond the dreams of avarice before. And they've each added tens of billions of dollars to their net worth. Because all you could do, you couldn't go out and shop at your mom and pop shop. Had to buy from Amazon because they deliver. You spend hours and hours and hours on Facebook. That's the whole point of Facebook, is to get you to spend as much time as possible looking at their stupid site. Twitter, same thing. You were trapped on the internet at home. And shopping, entertainment, everything was online. This is not about science. If you had coronavirus, you're 8 times better off than with the vaccine, but that doesn't count towards the vaccine mandates. This is about, and now you're getting data out of Britain where you're twice as likely now to get coronavirus if you've been vaccinated rather than not being vaccinated. And the whole thing is just, it's an assault on, yes, it's exactly what you said. It's an assault on liberty, individualism, non-conformist thinking, mm-hmm. all of the above.
Well, isn't that that's the underpinning of this system. It's everybody going along, getting along, not making waves and liking it. If an individual won't tolerate, you just described what an individual feels. They're not going to tolerate it. They're going to question it. Systems like this that are asking you to go against critical thinking and to ask you to live, not live your best life, not open your own shop, not treat your customers in a way that, you want to. All these things that you're asked to do, which is, it's antithetical to being human, most of it. People are going to question that. People want to be.
Chappelle had a great line. He said, if you take away somebody's livelihood, ability to make a living, it's the equivalent of killing them.
It gives you a sense of purpose.
Well, it's not just the money.
No,
it's the self-worth. It's the whole thing. And we locked everybody down. And now we've got this jujitsu move they've got you in, which is, we're going to take away your work and you can only keep working if you get the vaccine. And, it's just, it's a brutal. Early on, I started reading about politics and then I realized I was wasting my time. And I'm talking about elementary school. What I realized was everything's about human nature. If you study human nature, you'll get everything else that's happening in the world. And the reason collectivism, leftism, socialism, whatever you want to call it, doesn't work is 99% of our problems exists because we're either trying to root out or change human nature. Mm. And you can't do it. And this whole pandemic, everything about it was antithetical to human nature. That's why the communists killed 100 million people in the 20th century. Because they put them on the anvil to try to bang them into reshaping, and they won't reshape because they're humans. And humans are good at some things and bad at others, and you can't change it. That's, you've got 10,000 years of genetics working against trying to change that. And that's why the founding fathers were so brilliant. They devised a system that accentuated the positives of humanity and minimized the negatives of humanity. And they realized anyone with a thimbleful of power will abuse it. So they limited the government. And they made the individual, the autonomous individual, the primary driver of the government and the country. And we've spent the last 200 years undoing what they created. If you recall, when Ben Franklin walked out of the Constitutional Convention, somebody asked him, what did you create? He goes, a republic, if you can keep it. We couldn't keep it.
Well, I think you said a mouthful, actually. You know, if people are allowed to find what their talent is and explore it, that makes a much better society. There seems to be a lot more, you feel good about yourself, you're less likely to want to harm your neighbor. It's just a different, it's not.
And that's why, you know, that's why Russia, well, one of the things that was wrong with the Soviet Union was they chose you at 8 and said, okay, you're going to be a doctor, you're mm-hmm. going to be an engineer, you're going to be a railroad worker. I remember I was a musician for a lot of years. I tried to sell 50 million records and I never did. And I knew a guy. I used to run bars to buy groceries while I was trying to sell records. This guy used to come into my bar. I hadn't seen him in a while. Ran into him, walks up to me all excited. And he says, Seton, I finally figured out what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an EMT, an emergency medical technician. And my immediate visceral reaction was, I can't think of 3 jobs I would rather do less. And this is why the system works. Here's a job I wouldn't want to do in a million years. And here's a guy who can't wait to wake up and do it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
To your point. And that's why, by the way, if I can go on this subject for just a second, that's why abortion screws things up. Because everybody that's born is born with certain skills that plug into the system. You know, if they aborted him, there'd be one less EMT, and then things start going out of whack, and then you pull another plug, and the doctor at the emergency room gets aborted, and then, you know, you pull this plug, and the guy driving the ambulance to the hospital. You know, humanity has existed for a long time with almost no government, and we kept advancing and advancing and advancing. The only time government rose up, it was an impediment to us advancing. And that's not just this country in the last 230 years. I'm talking about all of human history.
So
if people learn this, you know, and we're taught properly by the government schools, which of course they're not, I think the biggest single mistake we made was we had this amazing miracle of human history, which is a system that limits government, doesn't empower government greatly. And then we turn it over to the government to teach about it. Well, that was a mistake. So it's humans, you know, and you can call it God. I'm a religious person. I think it's God. But the human species always seems to fill its own holes and make up its own shortcomings and advance itself. And only when other people impose their will upon them do things start getting screwed up.
Well, we're going to take a break in a minute, but I want to start off with this question. Is it mutually exclusive? And what is that mindset? If the government loves me, the government wants to take care of me. Is that based on what the government schools have taught people and to kind of indoctrinate them into thinking that it's all good, the bigger the better? And I'm going to get something for nothing. I mean, this is, I'm going to leave that out there because we're going to take our last break and have you answer that because it's, I think that's what we're living right now. So let's come back. We're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Seton Motley again. His website is lessgovernment.org and you can sign up for his newsletter, as he said. Now, you also write books as well, right?
No, I was offered a book deal in 2012, and he said, what would you write about? And I said, remember, this is 2012. I said, the next big paragraph is going to be our digital data. And he said, well, that's interesting. Okay. And when you turn in a book proposal, what it is, you write a sample chapter, a table of contents, and a summary. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I submitted that to this guy who's a big time book agent. I mean, he's big time. I mean, big time. I don't want to out him, but he's a government guy. He's a conservative agent. So he came back to me and said, why are all these private companies, Google, Facebook, Twitter, why are all these private companies in this book? I said, because they're the ones that are collecting the data. sorry, the dog's barking at a lizard. Not the government's, this is what I said. I said, George Orwell, I always think Animal Farm is a better book than 84. And the reason I say that is, while reading 1984 throughout, I kept thinking, government would never be competent enough to do what they're doing, especially with technology. Because, you know, they had the televisions mm-hmm. and the spying and the global surveillance mm-hmm. and all that. I'm like, government could never pull that off. So when the big tech companies came along, they struck a partnership. And so I said, they're the ones doing the data collection. They're the ones doing the mass surveillance, and then they're just partnering with the government. And it was like I did a card trick in front of a dog. He just didn't get the – he just didn't get it. And then 6 months later, Snowden came out, and he was like, oh. I'm like, well, it's too late now. So, no, in answer to your question, after that experience, I kind of soured on the concept of writing a book.
Got you. Well, this is much better because you get your voice out there on your terms, which I love. That's how it works.
Well,
it's organic.
Yes, it's yeah. The book editing process probably would have been very interesting. Yes.
Well, let's go back to the question I had about before the break about government being it's mutually exclusive, independent, free thinking. People who pursue their own gifts and talents versus what the government is there for. I don't think it's there. I mean, it's my opinion. I don't think I'm wrong, but it's not there to facilitate it anymore. It's there to squash it.
Right. And there's a great line from the late, great George Carlin, the comedian, years and years ago said, government schools, he didn't call them government schools, but he goes, the government doesn't want to teach you how to think and to be free thinking individuals. They want you to be just smart enough to run the machines and to take whatever they give you. And I'm paraphrasing this. Mm-hmm. You can look up the quote online, but that's what they're doing. That's, you know, first of all, if you look at the government school systems, you've got, it's still on the agrarian calendar, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the entire system is completely and utterly antiquated. It hasn't been changed since the 1700s, and the teachers unions won't let them change anything. And you know why they get the summers off? So the kids can pick crops. That's the schedule we're still on, so the kids can help their parents pick crops in their farms. And now, of course, they've exerted complete control. That really started up in the 70s as well. I just told somebody this and they were completely shocked by it. The 68 Chicago riots, right, at the Democrat convention was back when the Democrat Party wouldn't let the left into the convention. So they rioted. Well, then the left saw this and said, okay, we're going to take over the system. We're going to take over the system. We're going to take over Big Brother. We're going to take over the Democrat Party. 50 years later, here we are. And they in the early 70s, they started taking over, you know, the education system. And then Jimmy Carter created the Department of Education in 79. And you know, flash forward to Loudoun County. My best friends in college were Italian twins. They both work in Loudoun County schools. And I used to go talk to the AP classes. One of them teaches AP classes. And he'd let me come and speak. And I'd say government schools should be abolished. And he let me say that. And then this whole thing broke with the critical race theory with Loudoun County as ground zero. And I said, you know, this is what I've been talking about. This is the crap thing. You know, it's not education. It's indoctrination. And I mean, you know, it starts with their history classes. They start with the Civil War. Now, I think the South should have been allowed to leave. They're free people. If they want to leave, they should be able to leave. And Abe Lincoln shot at them to make them stay. Well, that's where they pick up the American narrative, which is the strong, powerful central government took on the states' rights, individualist people, and won. So that's the system we have now, is a strong, powerful central government. And you can say it's about slavery, but I don't think it was about slavery, because if it were about slavery, the five states in the North that still had slaves would have been told to get rid of their slaves, and none of them were. So even after the Emancipation Proclamation, they were allowed to keep their slaves, Maryland being one of them. So, you know, that's the whole concept of the government school system is to teach people the wrong history about America. That's the whole 1619 project. It's the whole thing. The government is all powerful or almost entirely powerful. And we're subservient to the government, and whatever they say goes, and no critical thinking is allowed, let alone fostered and encouraged. And that's what you see now, where Dr. Fauci is wrong more than, you know, Wimpy in the Popeye cartoons. And you can't question him. You're pulled off social media if you question him. You're banned by the traditional media if you question him. He's consistently wrong. But I think the one single greatest poison the government schools injected into the American system was they got most Americans to outsource their thinking. They were taught not to think for themselves. There will be government experts that will tell you what to think, and then you'll be fine. And that's what we're saying. And meanwhile, the most incompetent rubes and boobs in the country are in Congress and in government, Dr. Fauci being a preeminent example.
Well, that's a whole other show. But an overview of it, it seems to me you need to follow the money with all of this. Whether these people, they don't know anything. And they also, you know, cite the listen to the science part of this argument. And there's no thought going on, but there seems to be a lot of palms getting greased, whether that's from the university setting. I mean, I had a show back a while back that talked about how the NIH is the root source of money for medical education.
Oh, yeah.
All research.
Speaking of Eisenhower, everybody knows about the military industrial complex speech, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's more to it than that. I wrote about this a couple of years ago. The rest of the speech is him warning that government money in science will pollute science. It will pollute the university system that does the research for government science. And he called this in 1961 on his way out the White House door. Because he watched the Manhattan Project and how polluted that was, which was, for people who don't know, that was the race to create the nuclear bomb. And the government partnered with scientists and it was called the Manhattan Project. And we created the nuclear bomb first and dropped two on Japan with one eye over our shoulder at Russia saying, see what we can do now. But he watched the pollution of the scientific method and the scientific process by government money. And he said in the speech, they'll start doing science based upon what will get the money, not what on advances science and scientific knowledge and the human condition. And God, we see that all the time now.
Yeah.
When was the last time a climate skeptic got government money to research his climate skepticism?
Never.
The answer is never.
Never.
Is the answer to the question.
Well, you know, I actually want to ask you this. I know we only have like 3 minutes left, but I want to get into this one question. If the government is the root source of running the narrative, then what does China do? Because Chinese money is threaded through the educational system and the colleges. They're paying people in government. They're basically doing propaganda, but using American mouthpieces, whether they're athletes or actors or even Congress folks to do their bidding.
And speaking of the education system, have you heard of the Confucius Project?
I have.
That's them funding departments in colleges and universities all over the country. So, yeah, they're bribing everybody. I mean, Hunter Biden, our modern-day Leonardo da Vinci, who can run train companies and run oil and gas companies without ever having been to the country where the oil and gas company is, artist, is also a master investment broker because he went with his dad on Air Force Two when Biden was vice president to China, and a month later, a Chinese government bank gave him $1.4 billion to invest for them because he's an investment expert. And, I guess the crack gives him special insight into the investment world. Everybody's bribed by China. It's unbelievable. And it's been going on. If you think back in history, it actually tripped me up a little bit. I remember, Wen Ho Lee and Johnny Chung with the Clintons in the 90s when he got a bunch of money for his 96 reelection campaign, and you think, oh, that was some weird one-off. No, that's been part of the Chinese plan going back. That was 25 years ago, and they were bribing Democrat officials and government scientists. They got access to the Los Alamos lab in Arizona, or New Mexico. Los Alamos is in New Mexico. I get those two states mixed up. But anyway, that was China bribing American officials to get what they want out of our country. And it's just, my joke is, Vladimir Lenin said, the capitalists will sell us the rope with which we will hang them. And I said, yeah, unfortunately, we just gave it to them. We didn't even sell it. We didn't charge them for it. We just gave it to them.
So in the half a minute that we have left,
yes.
I mean, because this is like scratching the surface, in my opinion. I'd love to have you come back because you're just a wealth of knowledge. I love your style.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
If we could do one thing to work our way around this supply chain issue, what would it be? Would it be buy local? Would it be get yourself off the internet? Stop feeding this beast?
Well, the problem is money talks for the average folk too. And if you're going to get subsidized crap from China cheaper than American stuff, so what you have to do is you have to do what Trump was doing. And I'm not a total Trump fan. When he was right on a lot of crap. And one of the things we saw, we saw real wage growth in the low and middle class because of what Trump was doing on trade. You've got to, I wrote in August of 2020, Biden's plan should be called Build Back Never, because all his attacks by government on domestic production is going to exacerbate the problem, not help it. Mm-hmm. We need to do what Trump was doing. Vastly cut regulations, cut taxes wisely in the right spots, and impose some balancing tariffs and trade adjustments to offset the cheating, which is what it is, that these other countries, including China, are doing. You can't compete on an uneven playing field and then say, well, that's the free market. It's not the free market. It hasn't been a free market in 50 years. So what we have to do is lessen the damage we're doing domestically while simultaneously lessening the damage other countries are doing to us.
On that note, I'd love to have you come back. How can people reach you, read your articles?
Again, just go to lessgovernment.org. Please sign up for the newsletter. We won't sell your data. We won't lease your data. All we'll do is when I write something, you'll get an email. That's how it works.
Mr. Motley, you're awesome. I'd really love to have you come back because we have a lot. We just scratched the surface, frankly, and I enjoyed every moment.
I appreciate it. I enjoyed it, too. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.